Cherry Developer News, Episode 19 for Thursday, July 1st, 2010. I'm Ken Rimple.
I'm Eric Snyder.
And we're here to bring you stuff that we think is pretty cool that developers might want to, you know, bookmark and read. So let's see. Eric, we got a whole bunch of interesting stuff here today. If people want to follow along, we are using Delicious, but I'm having a little bit of delay in actually adding things to the account. Operator error on my part. So we'll definitely put the links in the show notes page at techcast.chariotsolutions.com. So look there. So look on that page for the show notes. We'll start out with a blog by M.R. Hackey, which actually turns out to be Hubert Klein. The thing I want to say about this is that basically, if you're used to dealing with Java dates, we all know that Java dates just basically stink, right?
Yeah, big time.
Like, what an over-designed, over-engineered mess.
Sure.
You know? So if you're looking at something better than that, Groovy actually has a really nice little date mechanism. And all you really have to know is that if you're dealing with a Groovy-ized date, just call clear time. That's pretty much the post. He could have done this in a Twitter article, but I kind of like what he said there. But anyway, just in general as a side note, if you are programming in Java and you want to use Groovy to make your life a lot easier, there's a piece of it called the GDK, which is the Groovy Development Kit. And the Groovy Development Kit basically takes a regular Java class and it adds nice methods and features to it. So take a look at date, take a look at string. There's even like a there's a whole bunch of different features. I was trying to think of the one that I saw the other day that was pretty cool. Executing something. You could basically say in quotes something, you know, some command line, in quotes, then close the quotes, dot, execute, and it will kick it off in the command line and return your results.
Okay.
Little things like that. So anyway, groovy goodness, as they say. So that's my quick short article. Eric, you have something on Passenger 3?
Yeah, I do, Passenger 3. So if you're a Rails developer, you probably know about Fusion Passenger. Now, the name, I won't comment on the name. You can probably... So I think it was originally Mod Rails. So if you think about it that way, it sort of makes more sense. So basically, there's two different ways to launch and run Rails applications, or you know, Django apps, or any of these sort of CGI-ish based frameworks. So you can either use the reverse proxy model, which in years past we'd use Mongrel or thin pools of servers, you know. And you would have a reverse proxy that would pass through any requests to the anything that wasn't considered a static request for static resource to you know whatever thin or other process or Mongrel process. So Python had Mod Python at one point. It's now dead, but which is just an Apache module. So basically, what that would allow you to do is run Python within Apache itself. It could be in a separate process, but it's basically controlled by Apache.
Right.
So, Mod Rails Mod Ruby was around, then it kind of died, and then it kind of came back. And I don't know how much of the code is still there, or maybe it's all new code, but basically it became Fusion Passenger. So the company is Fusion, Phusion.
Oh, okay.
So, basically this is, they call it the automatic model. So I guess their point is good in that, if you have using the reverse proxy model, you have these pools of Mongrel processes or thin processes or whatever your server happens to be. But then you have to make sure they're running. You have to monitor them. You have to start them at the right time. They're not really connected to the web server. So there's a lot of extra stuff you need to do. And in development, it's a real pain too because, you're not really going to do that in development. You're just going to run the built-in WebRick server or something like that. So they're coming up with this thing called – well, first of all, the article goes into why the automatic model is such a good model, except for development up until now. But they're coming out with Fusion Passenger Lite. So when Fusion Passenger 3 comes out, there's going to be the regular, full-blown
edition. Through Apache, everything, yeah.
Apache or Nginx.
Oh, okay. So, another – I don't know about Nginx. Maybe for the readers. Listeners.
Nginx is just a very – very fast web server.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and it's got a plugin architecture that's, similar in concept to Apache or Lite HTTPD or whatever.
Is it written in C or something like that, or
I don't know. Okay. There's some Russian genius that built it, So
okay. That'll be a plugin for either of these, or there'll be a feature to install this for either Apache or Nginx.
Well, they have that now, but for Fusion Passenger Lite, which is coming with version 3, will allow you as a developer to have the best of both worlds. So you'll have to be able to go on a command line, fire up Fusion Passenger Lite, you get a lightning fast web server and you get a Ruby server at the same time. So the problem was before, you know, you could always go to the command line and fire up, you know, script server, right?
Right.
But the problem is it didn't do a good job serving up static resources. Mm-hmm. So you always had to have like Apache in front or something that was good at serving up static resources. This is the best of both worlds because it's a Ruby server and it's got an Nginx core to it. So
your workflow as a developer to test wouldn't be very much different. It's just you're running a different command. Or is it still script/server that you're running? It will fire this off.
Well, I don't know if I assume Rails would be smart enough to pick it up. Well, right. It's just a command. I don't know if it's going to be script server, but a single command. So basically, this makes your development environment a lot closer to what you're deploying.
Production, right?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's great. Yep. Yeah, and I see here there's a whole video on this too. So, okay, pretty cool.
Yeah.
Alrighty, let's see. So I have Firefox 4, 4 you say? Yeah, 4. we run, I guess, 3.6. I don't know what version I'm even running anymore because I'm not running it because I'm running Chrome. But 3.7, I think, is one of the code lines where they went to 3.6. And at 3.6 time frame, they said, we're going to build a version of Firefox that includes out-of-process plugins, I guess, to get away from the overhead of running the plugin and munging up the Firefox process. And then they took 3.7 and higher and kind of went forward with the product line. The first beta is out. Michael Pronsch, I think is how you say it, Pronsc, on DZone. He basically has a blog entry on this. And basically the watchword from reading it was that it's faster and it's more feature-rich. So some of the things that have come up would be they're moving the tabs at the top like Chrome has.
Right.
Whether you like that or not, I guess you can kind of tear off a page, which I've used that on Chrome.
Yeah.
Additional CSS and HTML5 support.
Are they going to the process per tab model or just one process for a plugin?
That's a good question. I'm glad you're asking me these questions.
Maybe I should have asked you before the podcast.
Well, I just did that to you. This is where Eric and I spar. I have absolutely no idea, but he might mention that somewhere deeper in the article. But it's possible, certainly. Hopefully they're going down that road because I do like that part of Chrome.
Yeah, me too.
And they're also going to have like an add-on management page that you can go to that actually manages your add-ons. It's not like a separate pop-up. It's more integrated into the tool.
Gotcha.
So anyway, that's on dzone.com. We'll provide a link to that.
Okay.
Now, speaking of Firefox 4, let's go to Tomcat 7.
Yeah, that's a natural transition there.
Okay. Certainly, yeah.
So, believe it or not, I do know a few things about Java, as I'd still spent the majority of my life working in Java space.
Yep.
So, you know, Tomcat's been around for a very long time. Tomcat 7 has been released.
It's been a long road to 7, hasn't it?
Tomcat 7 beta has been released.
Yeah, well, still. Yeah.
Yeah. So aside from the usual lots of internal code cleanup line in the release notes, it's amazing how every release there's lots of internal code cleanup.
Of course.
You think at some point there's no cleanup left to do, but there's always, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So the biggest new features are, aside from the baselining of the specs, Servlet 3.0, JSP2.2, EL2.2, memory leak prevention and detection.
That's big.
That is huge because in this blog page, just on the memory leak detection, maybe we'll get that link in there too.
Sure. I think I read something about this before. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's interesting. So there's memory leak detection, or sorry, what is it?
Here, let me look on this too.
Yeah. So there's memory leak prevention, right? So there's a new lifecycle listener. I love these names for these Java classes. Jerry Memory Leak Prevention Listener. I guess that's not too bad. So it prevents memory leaks by calling various parts of the Java API that – this is the part I like the most – that are known to retain a reference to the current context class loader. So basically the problem is if a web application happens to be the first thing to call one of these standard Java APIs, then the web application class loader will be pinned in memory. And that's the source of a lot of these problems that we have. So when you go to undeploy, you know, stuff sticks around.
Yeah.
And you can't redeploy.
And then like two redeploys or one
later,
how big your app is.
So you run out of perm space. It's like this big voodoo.
Right.
So, you know, they figured, well, you know, we can't actually fix it for real, right? So because it's like a fundamental issue with the way Java class loading works.
Right.
So they got smart about it and said, well, we know what the main culprits are, the chief suspects, right? The usual suspects. We're going to call those first. You know, not that we actually need any of this stuff.
Right.
We're just going to go ahead and call those first.
Cool.
at the yeah. So that you're by the time your web application class loader gets to it, you know, it's not going to cause a problem.
You know what? Okay, yeah.
So it's kind of it's a little hackish, but it certainly will do the job. And then it also has some memory leak detection. So they were using it to detect not only problems in people's apps, but also in the JDK itself and things like that. So that's very cool.
Yeah, actually, just as a side note, I found the guy Pranch, who I talked to about in one of the earlier articles just now, he has a DZone article back in February that chains off of this. I'll put it in the show notes with this with yours. And there's a whole interview with Mark Thomas from SpringSource.
Yeah, right. That's who posted this article.
Oh, okay, good, yeah, good, yeah. So right. So he has a whole interview about like how they're detecting the errors and stuff. So we'll link to that as well. That's a good reference for you.
Right. So cool. It's the other big, you know, features are some additional protection against session fixation attacks, CSRF cross-site request forgery protection with a new filter, you know, better security for manager and host manager apps and stuff like that.
Hmm. Alias support. Is that like, I guess, web app aliases?
I skipped over that for a reason, Ken.
No. Well, it's just making me think. Yeah, like what could that be? That's very cool.
Yeah, that is a good question. I'm not really sure.
And you have to answer it right now.
No, I can't.
You don't. No. All right. Well, I have another one that you're probably going to grill me on that I may not be ready for at all. But I've been looking for unit testing and integration testing frameworks. You know, first, as I teach the SpringSource courses, you know, one of the sections is always how do you integration test Spring? And I try to pull it back and say, well, the reason you're using like a Spring on Java is because you want to provide modularity of the code so you can test the code, right? Mm-hmm. So if you create beans and you mount them as separate elements, well, you can test them in isolation.
Right.
But unit testing and using things like Easy Mock are confusing to a lot of developers at first because they're just not normal programming. It's kind of treat things like recorders, and you record what you want to do, then run the test and replay the record and see if it actually broke anything, all sorts of things like that.
Right.
So the process is a little bit different than regular development. So Spock was created to make this kind of work a little easier. And you'll notice if you look at the introduction to Spock link, let me pull it up here for you. But it looks a lot like, of course, you'd have to turn backwards, but it looks a lot like those spec tests and, where you can actually tell it to do certain things in a more English-like language, like, you know, well-named.
Oh, like a BDD style
BDD
naming.
BDD style,
for
exactly,
sure.
Exactly. So anyway, there's the article that kind of caught my eye, and it's kind of on my list of things to look at is Spock. It's Groovy-based, so they have a DSL for doing the testing. So anyway, so this particular article is from Alexander Hubert again. Hubert Klein basically tells you how to do this. He uses a 10-line Gradle script, which Gradle is like a build tool, which actually has three white space lines. So we'll take that back, or two white space lines. So it's really eight lines to set up the actual thing. And most of what he's setting up is just basically saying, for the test compile phase, use Spock core for Groovy 1.7. And he tells the Gradle build to use Groovy. Beyond that, if you're used to doing Maven, you basically create the directory source main Java, source test Java, source main Groovy, source test Groovy, whatever, and drop things in the right place, and then you just run it. So he kind of has a good starting example of what to do, how to kick it off, how to write things. And then I also am going to include in the show notes the actual Google code URL for the project, because the wiki on the project is very good as well.
Hmm.
So Spock, if you're looking for a behavior-driven testing framework potentially, or just something more agile, let's say, than a JUnit, and so you don't have to write so much physical mocking, mm-hmm. look into Spock. Eight open source business models. It's called Profiting from Open Source Without Selling Out. It's actually Computer World. And normally I don't read this stuff, but I kind of had a good chuckle at some of these. It's eight different models. So I'll just kind of like drive through a couple of these. Like the open source business model, number one is work with friends, right? This is the whole we all work together, we contribute to a nice code base we can use over and over again kind of model.
Right.
And we just happen to open source it. And then it goes from that, the pendulum swings all the way to the end to like number seven, selling fear, uncertainty, and doubt, which cracks me up. You know, so you better buy support because if you don't have support, you're going to be left in the lurch. You know, certainly there's a space for that in enterprises, but there are some companies I would think that are selling more on the fear factor. This kind of ties into Joel Confino's podcast a couple weeks ago that we did on open source licensing. And Eric, do you want to do the HTML5 coming to Gmail? We can just talk about it together.
Yeah, no problem.
Cool.
So I just found this out like 5 minutes ago. But, well, it's not exactly a big revelation or anything, but Google Gmail, I guess Google has officially come out and backed HTML5 for Gmail for obvious reasons. And if my link will ever come up.
It's ticking.
So, I mean, obviously Google's got a lot of skin in the game when it comes to HTML5, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, they want you to visit their properties and to get a good experience. You know, HTML5 is a big part of that picture.
Yeah.
Is that their development manager?
Who's that?
Job
Jackson?
No, he's from IDG.
He's from IDG.
Oh, okay.
He's external.
No, there's quotes from Adam DeBoer, who's a staff software engineer.
Right. And this was at some show, Usenix Web Apps 10.
Right. So basically the article goes over some of the things they were able to and some of the things they were unable to do in HTML5. But basically what they're doing is they're going to be able to get rid of some JavaScript and replace it with just CSS3. Stuff, and they list some things that they're still going to have to do in JavaScript, but basically it's going to give an overall better experience for everybody in Gmail.
Did you see what the goal he has in the article, when he's asked what their real goal here is to get Gmail to load in under a second?
Right.
I take that.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that's one of the complaints people have about Gmail sometimes.
Yeah.
Is that there's a lot going on there.
Well, they kicked Google Gears to the curb, right, when they went down the HTML5 route. That was their database.
Right.
And they're saying in here they're actually going to do their HTML5 data storage for everything, which they're doing that on the iPhone now anyway, and HTML5 handhelds, I think, with like things like Google Reader and Mail. So interesting to see. At least I think that's what they're doing. I thought I read that somewhere.
Yeah. Well, they're still using Gears for now.
Are they?
Okay. Yeah. But they want to get rid of that.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So that'll be nice.
All right. Well, that's the links for the show. Again, you can find them right now. We'll have them up on the Dev News, up in the TechCast site at techcast.chariotsolutions.com as part of the show notes for this episode. And we'll also get them up to Delicious when we get a chance. If you have anything you'd like to submit, you can certainly just go ahead and submit them to the Dev News tag, I believe we're using. Developer News? What are we using?
Developer News?
Yes, Developer News is the tag. Shows how up to date I am on where we're putting stuff. If you want to leave us feedback, you can either tweet it out. You know, we're at TechCast, so you can always throw that on your tweet. You can also email us at techcastfeedback.chariotsolutions.com. And visit our website, Chariot Solutions, www.chariotsolutions.com. All right. And so for the Dev News this week, I'm Ken Rempel.
I'm Eric Snyder.
Have a good week.